Friday. Woo!
Welcome to First Amendment Friday on the Lars Larson Show.
Thank God it's Friday!
Today, Lars puts you in the driver's seat. You talk about what you want to talk about.
Government is the problem.
No topic is off limits.
We will make America great again.
Call 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-HEY-LARS to speak your mind. Now, First Amendment Friday with Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show, and welcome to my favorite day of the week. It's First Amendment Friday. It's the day we open up the phone lines, and every single subject under the sun is fair game. So if you want to join what we call the best conversation in talk journalism, it's here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. And if you happen to be a naysayer, yep, for more than 25 years, naysayers have always gone first on this program. You just have to come prepared to make your best argument, back it up with some facts and logic if you've got it, and then stick around for a couple of questions from me, as the lawyers say, in aid of an objection. If you want to join that conversation, it's 866-439-5277. You can always send an email instead. A lot of naysayers do that. talk@LarsLarson.com. And, of course, you can always vote in our X poll. Today's question, should every single state in America appoint a DOGE director to comb through its budgets for waste, fraud, and abuse? I think that'd be a terrific idea. And, in fact, I've made the comparison that if you say, well, they won't be sure of getting something done. The way Donald Trump sends Elon Musk out with DOGE to look for waste, fraud, and abuse. Now, the mainstream media would have you believe that Elon Musk himself is making the decision. I think this is a political tactic. They say, well, Elon Musk is not the president of the United States. No, he's not. He's an advisor to the president of the United States, and apparently the president thinks a lot of his advice. So don't be surprised when Elon Musk says, hey, we're sending $59 million to New York City to pay for luxury hotels for illegal aliens, that Donald Trump isn't going to thoroughly agree with Musk and say, no, we're going to claw that money back. Or we're sending out $22 billion that's being sent out by the EPA, and it's being sent out under fraudulent purposes, and we're going to claw that money back as well. Don't be surprised when Trump takes Musk's advice. And yet be clear on one thing. It is President Trump who is making that decision and not Elon Musk. And don't believe all this hogwash from the mainstream media. You see, the mainstream media didn't seem to care as much when it was Bill Clinton back in the 90s who had vowed to reduce the federal workforce by 12%. Back in those days, that would have been about 275,000 people. And ever since then, we've had a federal government that has grown like Topsy, and it needs to be pared back. And Trump is doing exactly that. He's doing what he promised to do. Now, another thing that Donald Trump has done, which is the fulfillment of a promise. He said, we're going to shut down America's southern border. We're going to stop the illegal alien flood or invasion that's been coming in. Do you know what's happened to those numbers? I mean, I still remember in the summer of 2021, Joe Biden's first year in office, when we were seeing numbers of 3,000 and 4,000 and 5,000 illegals per day. And we thought that was bad. And in fact, bad had been defined previously by the director of Homeland Security under Obama, who said, well, if we get 1,000 people a day crossing the border, that is a national crisis. Well, Joe Biden in the summer of 21 had 5,000 and 6,000 people per day crossing the border. So it was a national crisis times 5 or 6. And then by 2022 and 23, we saw days where there were 14,000 illegal aliens crossing the border. And Joe Biden would have had you believe, no, 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 don't pay any attention to all those videos you're seeing. Don't pay attention to the news reports. There is no flood of illegal aliens. And if you say, well, what's Donald Trump done to change that? Well, he hasn't had any help from Congress. No new laws have been passed. And yet, in 3 weeks, this is the result of what Trump did in fulfilling that promise. So far in the month of February, the first 10 days of February, the number of illegal aliens per day who've been caught across the entire southern border, about 2,000 miles long, is 359 illegals per day in the first 10 days of February. You say, hold on, we've gone from a high point of 12 to 14,000 illegals per day down to 359 under Donald Trump. Would I like him to get that number down to zero? Yes. Do I think it's a practical possibility? Well, let's see. If we had a wall or some kind of barrier between Mexico and the United States, if we had the full cooperation of Mexico, and it seems Donald Trump is able to get the full cooperation of Mexico, they're putting 10,000 National Guard on the northern border, we might get it fairly close to zero. I don't think we're going to get all the way to zero, but consider this. Crossings during February, so far in February of last year, compared to this year is down more than 90%. That puts the U.S. on track, according to the New York Post, to have the lowest monthly border crossings in 25 years. So if you say, well, has Donald Trump fulfilled his campaign promises? Well, if he's got the lowest level of illegal alien invasion of America in 25 years, I'd say he's pretty well fulfilling that promise. If the trend continues, the number of illegals coming into the United States could hit a level that has not been seen in America since 1968, 60 years ago. This time last year, border agents, and this was because Joe Biden knew that he was coming up on an election, and he had decided to reduce the numbers so that he could say, you see, illegal alien invasion is down. It was all the way down to 4,850 migrants crossing every single day, 10 times the current levels. And let me tell you something else about that number, 4,850. One of the little tricks that the Biden administration had done was to say, we're going to put an app on a smartphone. We're going to call it CBP, Customs and Border Protection 1. So the CBP app allowed illegal aliens on the south side of that border to simply pull out a smartphone, load up the CBP 1 app, and then apply electronically for refugee or asylum status, and then go to an official border crossing, not the middle of the desert, and walk up and say, I'm an asylum or refugee seeker. I've done the CBP 1 app. It allowed the Biden administration to say, those people aren't crossing illegally. We waved a magic wand, and we've granted them humanitarian parole, or we've granted them refugee status. They should have stayed in Mexico. That was the policy under Trump. But that's one of the ways they manipulated the numbers, and yet they only got the numbers down to 4,850 a day, and now it's less than a tenth of that number. Take a listen to what Tom Homan says when AOC, member of Congress, is giving advice to illegal aliens about how to come into America illegally.
I'm not an attorney. I'm not a prosecutor. Is that impediment? Is that impeding our law enforcement efforts? If so, what are we going to do about it? Is she crossing the line?
Is she crossing the line? I would say that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, member of Congress from New York City, she is crossing the line. If you impede the enforcement of American immigration laws, if you aid and abet illegal aliens to illegal entry to the United States, that's actually a federal crime. You know, nothing would make my heart go pitter-pat like having AOC slapped into handcuffs and dragged off by federal marshals and charged with violating federal law. That would be fantastic. But getting the numbers down to less than a tenth of what they were just 1 year ago, it does two things. It shows you that Donald Trump is fulfilling his promises. And number two, it puts the lie to what both Joe Biden and Kamala Harris said. They said there's nothing we can do to bring these numbers down. Well, Donald Trump's using the same laws that were available to you, and he's done that much in 3 weeks, more than Joe Biden got done in 4 years. It's First Amendment Friday. Your calls are welcome, and you're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
Lars has a face for radio?
Oh, he's hideous!
Wanna see? Follow him on Instagram at The Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program and welcome to First Amendment Friday. Every phone call is welcome, and of course, naysayers always go first at 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@larslarson.com and consider our X-Poll. The question's very simple. Should every state in America, I'm not talking about a federal mandate, but should every state in America go out on its own and create a DOGE-like department where the director of that DOGE-like department, the job would be to comb through budgets for waste, fraud, and abuse, and then simply advise state lawmakers and the governor, you need to fix this. And if they choose not to, then the public can do what the public generally does with unresponsive politicians at election time and simply vote them out. Should every state appoint a DOGE director to comb through budgets? I'd say yes to that. You can answer the question any way you like. You'll find the question at Lars Larson Show, and always brought to you by AMAC, the Association of Mature American Citizens. AMAC has the conservative values I believe in. I joined the group 10 years ago. You can do it as well. Just go to amac.us or call 888-262-2006. AMAC's better. Better for you and better for America. Now, yesterday, we had to play the soundbite from this lady, John Schakowsky, who's a Democrat member of Congress from Illinois, literally during a congressional hearing, advanced the opinion that one of the things that keeps women in America out of factory jobs is not because they say, oh, I don't want to do a factory job. If I work, I want to do something else. It's because of the word manufacturing. Well, apparently, Congresswoman Schakowsky from Illinois, who's 80 years old, and I would say well past her expiration date, she apparently doesn't know that manu in Latin means hands. It doesn't mean men. It means hands. In manufacturing is making things by hand, even though in most manufacturing these days, you're not making it by hand. Well, I asked, is manufacturing a sexist word that keeps women out of factory jobs? And 97% of you agreed with me and said no to that question, and only 3% of you were naysayers. Glad to get those calls at 866-HEY-LARS. I want to mention a couple of other things because this one really got under my skin. Rachel Maddow at MSNBC, who's an unrepentant liberal, and what she accused President Trump and Elon Musk of doing is called self-dealing. And what she was talking about is the fact that she discovered, well, the rest of the media knew about it as well, that there had been a deal cut to buy $400 million worth of armored Tesla vehicles through a State Department contract. And she said, you see, it's very clear. President Trump has been in office for 3 weeks, and he's already written a contract to buy $400 million worth of armored Tesla trucks. Well, there's a problem with that. The request for proposals, it was put out last year during the Biden administration. They said the State Department wants to buy armored electric vehicles, and they put the request for proposals out. One company and one company only actually put in a bid. Now, if you've ever followed state contracting or federal contracting, you understand that if they put out an RFP and there is one company that responds and they respond and say, we're capable of making the thing you want to buy, no matter what it happens to be, toilet seats, gold-plated hammers, or Teslas, if they put the request for proposals out and one company responds, they're going to get the contract. The contract was set by the Biden administration. And by the way, the State Department has now put the contract on hold under Donald Trump, but Joe Biden was willing to buy $400 million worth of Teslas from Elon Musk. Now, I might even suggest that because that contract was set last year, maybe that was Joe Biden trying to buy off Elon Musk the way Joe Biden has been bought so many times by so many other countries, most notably China. To your calls now. Let's start with Sam. Hey, Sam, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Hi, Larson. I was listening to your show, and a while ago, unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to call you back because I was unloading some stuff.
Yeah.
There was a discussion about an older gentleman was saying about religion. They have to follow God, otherwise, you know, they're all going to go to hell again.
He was saying that the United States government should adopt a Christian approach to solving the problems of the country, and I said, you can't do that.
So, yes. And the problem with that is this. Let me explain. So Christianity, in true nature, in true form, is not a religion. It's a way of life.
Yes, it is.
What do I mean by that? If you look at the founding fathers, when they would meet, they would pray. Now, that's very strange because if you look at it from the standpoint of your government, the founding fathers made it very clear that you should have not a religion controlling state or
correct.
The government, right?
Correct.
But they never looked at it that way. That's why. Now, if you look at the Catholic Church or other denominations, you can consider them religious. But Christianity in itself is not a religion. It's a way of life. That's why the founding fathers.
You know what, Sam? I agree with you. Because my wife and I spend about an hour in the book every day, and we've been doing that for years now. And the fact is, I have a deep distrust of religion. I believe in God. I believe in Jesus Christ. I believe that the Bible is the revealed word of God. But I don't much believe in religion because so many of them have been created by man. They usually depart from the scriptures in dramatic ways. There are people who promise, follow our religion and you'll get rich. Follow our religion and you'll be happy. And you say, that's not what the book says. And so the minute you start to depart from the book, you've got a problem. But I also take the view that even though the founders of this country were Christians, they also said they did not want to have a theocracy where the government would dictate this is going to be the main religion of the United States. And that's why they wrote the First Amendment into the Constitution. It says the federal government is forbidden to establish a religion. And what that gentleman was asking for was exactly that. Let's go to Robert, who's a naysayer. Robert, we love naysayers on this program. Welcome to the program. What's on your mind and what do we disagree about that makes you a naysayer?
Well, Lars, I'm just a naysayer to everyone, including myself, starting okay. with myself.
Okay.
I want to see the proof, you know. No, I wanted to mention that, unfortunately, my state, which I realize I can't mention which one, and my federal government both elected what I consider to be the worst possible government on earth. And that
you live in a blue state. It's a problem for about half the states in America, right?
Well, I'm proudly registered unaffiliated, so I basically don't really care which party. If it's one party, you got the fox in charge of the hen house. That's one of the best things about a multi-party democracy is you've always got someone watching it that isn't necessarily one of the agreeers.
Well, I can see the advantage, although you mentioned democracy. You know that we're not a democracy, correct?
I'm well aware of the fact that we're supposed to be a constitutional republic.
Constitutional republic and have representatives. We elect the representatives. The representatives make the judgment calls in either a state legislature or the Congress. So, but I'm like you.
I think
there's a creative tension that happens if you have not, you know, one party is always going to be a little bit bigger than the other, kind of like right now. The Republicans are a little bit bigger in the House, a little bit bigger in the Senate, and we have the presidency. But the fact that it's tight means that you have to do business with the other side. When you have an overwhelmingly one-party situation like you describe, then you end up with one party saying, well, we don't have any controls on us at all. We don't have to listen to the other side at all, even though the other side represents 40-45% of the people in a given region.
Well, not just that, Lars. The other problem I have with the one-party rule is that anytime you're practicing the politics of ram it down their throats because we can,
yep.
It has no legs. It won't last. You're wasting my taxpayer dollars in 3 years, 4 years, whatever, 6 years. This is all going to go in reverse again.
Yeah, and in fact, a good example of that would be Obamacare. Remember when Obamacare passed? And the Democrats said, we don't have to listen to the other side. So they got not a single Republican in the House, not a single Republican in the Senate. And they said, we're going to pass it anyway. They had a tough time even talking their own party members into supporting Obamacare. And it was a massive failure because they forgot. You've got to represent all the people in the United States and not just the people who back the Democrat Party, party of slavery since 1829. You're listening to First Amendment Friday.
The Lars Larson Show.
I'd like to be out in the sun.
Welcome to Honestly Provocative Talk. But fair warning, if you're listening to this show, you're likely on the FBI's most wanted list. Welcome to the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program on First Amendment Friday, and extend a welcome, a wonderful welcome, to Sarah Parshall Perry, who's a legal fellow at the Meese Center for Legal and Judicial Studies at Heritage. Sarah, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Lars.
You know, one of the things that I've noticed I get the most calls and emails about is people saying, how does one of several hundred federal judges have the ability to effectively, or they think they have the ability, to veto the actions of the president in operating the executive branch of government?
Well, it depends on whether or not you're an activist judge. And that's exactly what it goes back to right now. We're looking at this judge who was a Biden appointee who actually took a very extraordinary step to halt, at least temporarily, an executive order prohibiting the federal funding of so-called gender-affirming care for minors. Now, this is our Medicaid, Medicare, Obamacare-initiated tax dollars being spent on the chemical castration and surgical mutilation of minors. But people in a group of plaintiffs, minor organizations, those who were affiliated with trans-identified youth and their parents, brought suit by the ACLU saying this is illegal. Congress has the spending power and the president doesn't. But what they've forgotten is that Congress cannot spend funds that have not been directed for specific purposes. We are, as you know, Lars, under a continuing resolution right now. We have probably going to have to re-up this by September of this year, but these funds cannot be spent without presidential authorization because we can't spend unappropriated funds. That's the way the government works. So this is simply, as the chief enforcement officer in the nation, the ability of the president to say, I'm going to put the brakes on this. The funds haven't been spent yet. I don't want them to be spent. I'm going to make a fiscal analysis, and I'm going to, in the meantime, keep these kids from doing irreparable harm to their bodies.
See, and you and I are on the same page on this whole subject, and I call it the same thing, chemical castration and surgical genital mutilation of children in particular. The adults is another issue, and we can debate that one another day because I don't think the taxpayers should be paying for that either. But let me ask you this. If the Congress had passed a law, you know, back when it was, you know, when the Democrats had more sway that they don't have today, if they had said, we are going to specifically appropriate X dollars for gender, so-called gender-affirming surgical and hormonal treatment, would they have an argument that, well, the law says the money is for that purpose? In this case, are Medicare and Medicaid, probably mostly Medicaid, spending the money just simply saying Medicaid has the money and the Center for Medicaid and Medicare Services under HHS can designate what the money gets spent for, and that's the authority. It's purely coming from the bureaucracy, isn't it?
That's exactly it. It is coming through the Department of Health and Human Services. And remember that the Biden administration was trans early, trans often. It was all in on the gender medicine junket. And this is exactly a hangover from what we saw under that previous administration. But here's the thing. These funds have to be reauthorized every year. And appropriations bills are different from substantive legal bills that are passed in Congress. Now, yes, appropriations and substantive bills are the same acts of Congress, but one simply funds the operation of the government. And this is under a continuing appropriations bill funding Medicaid, Medicare, and Obamacare. But they do not create substantive law. And what I found interesting in the lawsuit being brought against the president is that these plaintiffs cannot allege the violation of any substantive law because there isn't one. This is simply an appropriations rider that they want expended in a certain way, that the president prior expended in a certain way, but for which the government is under no legal obligation to have to spend a certain way. But I find this individual, Judge Herson, who is out of the District of Maryland, Federal District Court for the District of Maryland, very close to my home area. This is a judge who was a Biden appointee. He's been on the bench 1 year. He was a public defender prior to that in the city of Baltimore. He is as left-leaning as you can get, and he used this as an opportunity to grandstand, saying that the president was doubting whether or not these people, transgender minors, even had a right to, quote, exist. Well, that's not legal analysis. That's not good judicial reasoning. That's essentially morality grandstanding.
And by the way, Sarah, you know I'm not a lawyer. I always tell my audience I'm not a lawyer. But I want to understand something, because if you made the argument, why, if you don't use this money to do these things to these kids, irreparable harm will happen. Except I would think you could walk into court and say, no, if you don't get the transgender surgery this year, but next year we decide that the Congress has appropriated the money, you get it then nothing has been denied you. On the other hand, if you do spend the money and you do mutilate these children, who I don't even think are old enough to consent to the operation or the hormone treatments at all, but if you do this treatment to them, you can't unring that bell. You can't undo it, and irreparable harm could be done to a child with taxpayer money. I don't know that the legal arguments will get that far into it, but that I would if I were the lawyers for HHS now under RFK Jr., I'd be arguing you're going to do irreparable harm to these kids that cannot be in any medical way undone. No.
That's exactly it. And you're going to force the American taxpayer to foot the bill, which is unconscionable. We have things like Hyde riders in appropriation bills that prevent explicitly, for example, the expenditure of taxpayer dollars for funding elective abortions. This should be absolutely no different. And just because there's no rider currently prohibiting gender-affirming care does not mean it is not within the president's Article 2 powers as the commander-in-chief to say, I'm drawing the line. We're not spending the money that's in the kitty right now in this particular way.
You know what I'd love to see? I know we got bare majorities in both houses, but if they propose a Hyde-like amendment, a gender amendment, and said you can't spend federal money on this, how many Democrats would actually want to stand up and vote and say, no, I stand up for the right of American taxpayers to fund the genital gender mutilation of children? I don't think too many of them would like it. Sarah, thank you very much. I appreciate you coming on. That's Sarah Parshall Perry. By the way, you know how hard it is to get medications? You know, things like ivermectin and mebendazole these days? It can be frustrating. Those medications are so important, but getting your hands on them, not so easy. That's why you need to check out All Family Pharmacy. They make it easy to get ivermectin, mebendazole, and other hard-to-find medication. It's a pharmacy in Florida, not overseas. It handles the prescription for you, no doctor visits, no waiting in line, and they ship it straight to your door. Super simple and easy. Let's be real. We've all seen how quickly health threats can pop up and then shake things up. It's better to be prepared now than get caught off guard later on. With All Family Pharmacy, you can stock up on what you need. Order in bulk to make sure you're always ready. Don't wait for the next crisis. Go to allfamilypharmacy.com/Lars. Then use my code LARS10, that's LARS10, to get 10% off your order. Stock up now and get prepared at allfamilypharmacy.com/Lars.
The Lars Larson Show.
What is
it's Friday
on my mind. Focus, it's Friday.
Oh, Friday. Yeah, it's Friday. Woo!
Welcome to First Amendment Friday on the Lars Larson Show.
Thank God it's Friday.
Today, Lars puts you in the driver's seat. You talk about what you want to talk about.
Government is the problem.
No topic is off limits.
We will make America great again.
Call 866-HEY-LARS.
That's 866-HEY-LARS to speak your mind.
Now, First Amendment Friday with Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on a First Amendment Friday. It makes it my favorite day of the week because we open up the phone lines and every subject is fair game at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And I try to answer all of them, but there are about 1,000 to 1,100 a day. So some days it's kind of a challenge. Our X poll today, should every state in America appoint a DOGE director, you know, Department of Government Efficiency director, to comb through its budgets for waste, fraud, and abuse? I would answer that one yes. You can answer it any way you like. You'll find the question on X at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. Brought to you by AMAC, the Association of Mature American Citizens. AMAC has the conservative values I believe in. I joined the group. You should too. I joined about a decade ago. Just go to AMAC. AMAXC.us or call 888-262-2006. AMAX better. Better for you and better for America. Yesterday, based on the nitwit comments of Jan Schakowsky, Democrat member of Congress, who thought that the word manufacturing is the reason that a lot of women don't want to get factory jobs, you know, because of the M-A-N in manufacturing. Is that the thing that's keeping women out of factory jobs? I mean, ignore the fact that manu in Latin means hands, not men. Well, 97% of you joined me in a no vote, and only 3% of you voted yes. I got to get this off my chest, though. Without knowing any better, you might think that the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services provides, say, health and human services, things like food and drug safety, Medicare and Medicaid, all that kind of stuff. Well, that was true until Joe Biden arrived, along with about 10 million of his favorite illegal aliens. This week, we found out that HHS, now headed by Robert F. Kennedy Jr., shoveled out more than $22 billion in 4 years for cars, houses, college, and even business startups, all of that money going to illegals, or as the Democrat Party prefers to call them, undocumented voters. It paid for business startup loans up to $15,000. It bought cars for what liberals call the new Americans. It paid for cultural orientation classes that the boys in Trende, Aragua seem to have missed out on. $22 billion. Now, you might have wondered why our federal government claims it can't do much of anything for actual citizens, people like hurricane victims in Florida, flood-ravaged families in North Carolina, people in Maui and burned-out Los Angelinos. Joe and Kamala were blowing your dough on illegals that they hoped would change the course of November's election. Well, as usual, that pair didn't get very much right at all. Of course, laying out all those freebies, along with the airline tickets, debit cards, and luxury hotel rooms, it's a bit like leaving food laying around your house. Soon enough, the rats are going to show up, and in this case, they certainly did. Now, on this First Amendment Friday, let me go first to Thomas. Hey, Thomas, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Well, hi, Lars. I called in last Friday, and I was a little disappointed in you cutting me off. I was, I said if Trump is a law and order president, then why did he pardon all those that battled the Capitol Police on January 6th?
And I gave you the answer. The answer was because...
No. Well, you did not.
Okay, you don't want the answer. That's fine. Go ahead. Finish.
No, I already got the answer. Okay, so what you told me was, well, not all of them were bad people, and then you cut me off.
Well, what I said was many of them were people who walked up on Capitol Hill and never even entered the building. There were some of the 1,500 charged who never even entered the Capitol. There were others who entered the Capitol through doors that were held open to them, open for them by the Capitol Police. And then many of them were both charged and pursued legally, and some were locked up and not afforded a speedy trial. And this went on literally for years. Do you think that simple trespass at the state at the national Capitol warrants that kind of treatment?
I think that beating on the police does. And
those people were charged with assault. Those people were charged with assault. Thomas, if you had some substance to that example, I'd be glad to listen to more. But, you know, if you're just going to say, well, were people who assaulted the police charged with assault? Yes, they were. Were people also charged with felony crimes for merely walking around on public property? That's crazy. Let's go to Rebecca in Nevada. Hey, Rebecca, thanks for listening on KKFT. What's on your mind?
Well, I want to praise you, first of all, for citing that incident of Thomas Jefferson in 1803.
It's a good one, isn't
exercising,
it?
Yeah, exercising the power of impoundment for that money. It made me so excited. I went and looked it up. I'm on a website called stateoftheunionhistory.com. Unfortunately, this says this was changed basically in 1974.
It was right after Watergate. Yeah.
Right. The Impoundment Control Act, which required that the rescinding of appropriated funds be approved by the House and the Senate within 45
days. Okay, except for this, Rebecca, my recollection is that has never been tested in court. And here's why.
Correct.
If I said to you, Rebecca, could we pass a law reinstating slavery? And you'd say, well, you could pass a law, but it would get thrown out by the courts as unconstitutional because it would violate the rights of citizens. If in this case, if the Congress passes a law that says we're going to limit the president's constitutional authority to be the head of the executive branch, do you think that law is constitutional?
Well, that was actually what I was going to sort of argue, is that at this point, I think there has to be an examination of the 1974 law for its constitutionality, because I am not aware of any statute that permits Congress to limit the presidential power.
Nor am I. And, so, and Rebecca, I think like a lot of the things Trump is doing, he's now set us up for exactly that test, because you say, how do you get something like birthright citizenship in the courts and have it actually confronted by the courts? Well, in this case, Trump has said, I'm not giving birthright citizenship to people who are children of illegal aliens. And he knew that the other side would immediately say, we're going to take you to court. And I think Trump, under his breath, probably said, good, that's exactly what I thought you'd do, and we're going to win in court.
Well, the other thing I'm hoping, and why I called, is I'm hoping that everybody will basically write a letter to their congressman asking Congress to basically repeal the act that was passed in 1974. Because we do have the Congress, and we do have a mechanism where it doesn't have to go through the courts. The Congress can just go ahead and pass something.
Congress actually do its job? I don't know, Rebecca. You may be more optimistic than I am, even.
Well, but I'd love to see people actually write in and make the request.
It's a good idea.
You know,
because they could head it off and say, we don't have to go to court. We've already decided that when you have these three co-equal branches of government that in some ways aren't co-equal, Congress has a lot of authority that a president doesn't have. We had founders who deliberately designed a weak executive, but a weak executive still with some significant power, you know, but not probably equal to that of the courts. There are judges who believe they have the right to veto what a president does. They believe that their powers are actually would supersede the powers of a president. I agree with you. Congress could do its job and get this fixed. Coming up, data shows Joe Biden wrecked American small business, and Donald Trump is doing what he can to fix that. That's up next.
What does Lars think about smoking the devil's lettuce?
I won't go schizo, will I?
It's a distinct possibility.
Now it's time to take a hit of Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails. You know, the data shows that Joe Biden just wrecked. He put a wrecking ball to American small business. But what steps does President Trump have to take to actually get American business back on track? Jeff Brabant joins me now, who's vice president of the National Federation of Independent Business. Jeff, good to have you back.
Thanks for having me back, Lars.
I guess it's a good news, bad news kind of thing, because the business, small business optimism index actually fell a bit in January, but that's after it rose dramatically right after the election. Am I missing the way that those numbers add up?
No, I think you summed it up well. It rose dramatically after the election because I think small business owners immediately realized, all right, at least we're not going to have to deal with any more regulations here. The Biden administration was really hampering the small business economy with regulation after regulation. I think small business owners realized, all right, President Trump's coming in, no new regulations, that's a good thing. But over the last month or two, I think they've been watching the news, reading the news, and saying, oh, wait, is there potentially going to be a tax increase next year? We all hope there won't be, but one thing that's kind of flying under the radar is that the C-Corp rate everyone's talking about is permanent, right? That's great for bigger businesses. Most small businesses aren't C-Corps. They're what you call these pass-through businesses. I mean, they pay the individual rates. And
right. We're
looking at 5 out of 7 rates are going up. We're looking at the 20% small business deduction, which the president and Congress created to benefit these small pass-through businesses, going up. So if you're a small business and you hear all this kind of bickering on TV and you're saying to yourself, Do I need to put off some capital investments in case my taxes go up next year when my larger competitors' taxes aren't going up? So I think that's a little bit of the uncertainty we're seeing right now.
Well, help me understand this, because one of the things we've talked about literally for the last couple of years is the fact that the 2017 tax cuts, known as the Trump tax cuts, maligned by the left and maligned by the mainstream media, but they were tax cuts for virtually every group from, you know, Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk all the way down to a minimum wage worker. Everybody got cuts, and that those cuts were going to simply disappear at the end of this year unless they were renewed by the Congress and the president's signature. Now it sounds like they will be renewed. Where are the increases likely to happen?
Yeah, the ones small businesses care most about, the ones we really want to see renewed, are it's the 20% deduction that's for small businesses specifically. There are 30 million plus small businesses that'll see a tax hike if Congress does nothing. So that's the big one. Now, that gets controversial in some way, shape, or form, because, of course, there's small business owners who have more than $400,000 in revenue, which some people like to claim that's not a small business. That's a big business, when the Small Business Administration and everyone else would say otherwise.
Hold on. $400,000 in gross revenue, what's the average profit percentage for a small business? If you're grossing $400,000, do you get 6% of that, or 8 or 10% of that?
It really depends on industry, so it's hard to say, because some industries have bigger margins than others. Depending, you know, if you're a small retailer, your margins are going to be really low, right? Because that's a low margin industry. But if you're in these financial services, it might be a little higher. But so that's really hard to say, right? But I mean, that's not the definition of a small business. You could have 15 employees and have $750,000 in revenue. That doesn't mean you're a big business. It just means you got 15 employees and you got to be able to make payroll here, right? So
yeah,
that's one of the kind of crazy things that gets discussed here.
Well, see, and that's the thing I just don't understand, is if people think, well, you're grossing $400,000. Yeah, and I make a net profit of 10% of that, so I'm making $40,000 a year. And they say, so you're basically slightly above minimum wage is what you make by running a small business and taking on all the risks and everything else.
Yeah, and that over 400 is not take-home pay. Just because you might have $400,000 in net revenue doesn't mean you're taking that home. Most of our members will tell you, hey, that's the money I'm using to open a new location. That's the money I'm using to buy a new piece of equipment. That's the money I'm using to hire a new employee. Like, I have to take a minimum salary by law, but I'm not taking that money home. And so people forget, when you tax them, you're taxing investment in the economy. So you don't want to discourage small businesses from investing in their employees and their community and the economy, because that has a trickle down effect all over the place.
Well, Jeff, is there any, I mean, really, do we have to doubt that a Republican House, a Republican Senate, a Republican president won't continue that 20% deduction for small business?
I think the policy has a lot of support. But I think we've seen this in the past, just because there's a ton of support for a policy doesn't necessarily mean we're going to get over the finish line. As you know, Lars, and I think your listeners know, there's a lot of things being debated in Congress. They got to pass the budget, which is really complicated to do, to use this reconciliation process. And then there's a whole host of other tax provisions they're going to write along with this. But we just want to make sure that, you know, we think this should be a bipartisan issue. There's no way that someone, a Democrat or Republican, should look at their local coffee shop and say, you know what, you need a tax hike when Starbucks isn't going to have one. That's absolutely ridiculous.
It is. Now, what else does Trump need to do to make things easier for business? Because one of the things I do like is his 10 for one, that if an agency wants to adopt one new rule, they have to get rid of 10 old regulations. And they may not get to one for 10, but it's a good place to start, or a good goal to shoot for, isn't it?
I think absolutely. That's a great one to start. Get rid of some of these old regs. It's death by a thousand cuts for a lot of small business owners. I mean, they don't have attorneys they don't have compliance teams, right? They're doing it themselves. You have 5 employees, you're doing all of the compliance work yourself. So any little bit really helps. And one thing we've recommended over the years is, hey, if you're going to write regulation that affects the entire economy, why don't you make one that's a little less burdensome for small businesses? If you got to do one for that's made for compliance teams, great. If you got to do one for small businesses, how about you just make it less burdensome? Let's just make it a little lighter touch on small businesses. It shouldn't be that complicated a thing, but like anything else in Congress, it tends to get pretty controversial.
Well, see, that's the approach. Jeff, if I walked into the average business, any kind of business, they want to serve you. Why? Because you're a customer with money in your pocket. But when you walk into a government agency, I wish they had the same kind of attitude. Hey, You want to start a new business. Okay, let's see how we can help you make that happen. Instead of explaining to you, we're going to throw up a big pile of paperwork and a bunch of fees and a bunch of requirements that are designed to make it hard for you to open a business. If we had people working within those agencies, both at the federal level and the state level, saying, well, you want to do this, that might be tough because the rules say this, but we're going to see if we can find a way, in the same way that when you walk into your favorite hardware store and say, I'm looking for one of these, that they try to find it for you instead of saying, well, good luck with that. That's going to be tough.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's so many things you can do. You could be first time paperwork error forgiveness, right? Some you mess up a piece of paperwork as you start a new business. Oh. You're not sure what you're doing. With certain laws, you don't get any forgiveness. There's a massive fine. Deal with it, right? So there's a lot of little things that you can do to make people's lives easier. You know, it's really just a lighter touch and not hammering honest business owners who make honest mistakes.
You know what's funny, Jeff? About a decade ago, I was talking to a guy who, and I said, what do you do? And he says, I have a small distillery. I make distilled spirits. And I said, oh, I said, I really wish you could make, you know, you can make beer and wine at home, but you can't make, you know, say a bottle of whiskey. And I said, so what would it cost if I wanted to get a license so I could be a licensed distillery and make a few bottles of whiskey for my friends at Christmas? And he said, well, Lars, the application at this time, maybe a decade ago, was $10,000. And he said, if you make, and he talked about what you were talking about. He said, if you make one paperwork error, one comma out of place, the BATFE will send the whole thing back and say, redo it. And then you have to walk back into your lawyer, who's charging you $500 an hour, and say, I need all this paperwork redone to fix this one comma. And by the way, don't make any other mistakes or they'll reject that one, too. That's exactly the thing you're talking about. That's Jeff Braben, who is the vice president of the National Federation of Independent Business. It is First Amendment Friday. Your calls are welcome. You can also vote in our X poll. Should every state appoint a DOGE director, you know, like an Elon Musk, to comb through the state and local budgets for waste, fraud, and abuse? Now, I would answer yes to that. It is the most common email or phone call that I've received over the last several weeks. You know that the kind of waste, fraud, and abuse that's being exposed at the national level by Elon Musk, DOGE, and ultimately Donald Trump, who makes the decision call about whether or not that money should go out the door or not. You know that same kind of thing is happening on a local level. It's just that there's nobody out there to actually dig into the budget. And again, the X poll, should every state appoint a local DOGE director to start combing through budgets for waste, fraud, and abuse? Imagine how much wasted money you could identify, and if that wasted money could be put to work on the actual things that people need.
The Lars Larson Show.
Somewhere 400 feet off the ground.
Facebook, X, and Google may censor you, but you'll never find censorship here.
Don't censor me!
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'm glad to get to your phone calls and your emails. We'll do that in a moment at 866-HEY-LARS. And if you happen to be a naysayer, we're going to put you first in line at 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. In any case, we'll get to your calls in a moment. I want to bring back on our friend, the former district attorney, Josh Markey, a member of the board of the Criminal Justice Truth Project. Hey, Josh, welcome back.
Thank you, Lars.
Hey, before we talk about Donald Trump's executive order on protecting sports that he signed last week, protecting women in women's sports from men in women's sports, before we get to that, I want to ask you about this. Correct me if I'm wrong. The president of the United States is the head of the executive branch of government, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so the Congress can appropriate a pile of money, and it is the president's job to faithfully execute the law. Does that mean that if a Congress appropriates money, that the president must spend the money?
No. And that's always been a classic tension with Congress people wanting to spend money, particularly on pet projects that might benefit either contributors or their constituents. And some presidents, not very many, have, going back hundreds of years, have chosen to say, yeah, you may have appropriated this, but I'm choosing not to spend it.
Jefferson did that at one point when he said, I'm not putting gunboats on the Mississippi River because we're working on a deal with Louis to buy the Louisiana Purchase, and it'll mess up the deal. So I'm not going to spend the money. And he famously did that, right?
Yeah, and there have been examples, you know, probably every 50 years at least with one president or another.
So when a federal judge says to the president, I am requiring you, you must spend this money, does the federal judge have the authority to order the head of the from the judicial branch, has a right to reach over to the executive branch and tell the president how to execute the executive branch?
Well, yes and no. It's a glitch of a huge nation, and we have over 250 United States District Court judges, what are often called Article III judges, meaning they're appointed for life. And it's hard to get rid of a federal judge that's gone bad as it is a president. It requires the same process, impeachment. So unfortunately, yes, what can happen is, frankly, a, you know, off the rails, semi-retired federal judge from, you know, some very remote part of the country can make an order which could affect everything. Now, the check and balance on that is that the executive, through the Justice Department, has the ability to appeal that first to the Circuit Court of Appeals, of which there are 12 around the country, and if that doesn't work, to appeal it to the United States Supreme Court. So, yes, individual, and it is a very screwy situation where, frankly, an obscure judge, many times who's not even a full judge anymore, they've gone what we call senior, meaning they're mostly retired, can order
and
something.
And they can pick and choose their cases, can't they?
Yes, absolutely. Particularly,
and they can be chosen when the Democrats go judge shopping. They can say, let's take it to Judge Marquis. He'll give us the decision we want. Do we really have a system where the people elect a president and then the president has 250 people who can veto everything he does?
In a way, that's not the way it's supposed to work. But yes, federal judges can, I mean, in the short term, and for example, one of the judges who made who contradicted President Trump's order, I'm trying to remember, I think it was on immigration, it might have been on citizenship, is a judge who the mainstream media claim, oh, he was appointed by Ronald Reagan, which is true. But think about this. He was appointed by Ronald Reagan in 1982. That's 40 years ago. And about in the year 2000, this judge started going extremely woke, and in a really famous case, basically decided to give a very lenient sentence to one of the terrorists who had come across the Canadian-American border with the intention of
The guy with the trunk full of explosives who got sweat.
Right.
And, he had the flu and he was sweating, and they thought he was sweating because he was nervous and he had the flu, but they found a trunk full of explosives. So let me ask you this then, Josh. If you've got this tension, as you call it, and I think that's a good way to describe it, and the president issues an order, which I think was sensible, shut down this federal spending. You've got federal agencies that are actually openly defying him by spending the money anyway, $59 million to pay for luxury hotels for illegal aliens, as one example. And then a judge who gives an order telling the executive what to do. If the president and his people, who've already said they think it's an illegal order, is he free to ignore an illegal order the way a lieutenant in the Army could ignore an illegal order?
No, and a lieutenant under the Army has to be really, really careful about. I mean, he can only
ignore
an illegal order if it's essentially a war crime.
But if the president is saying, I'm the head of the executive branch, this judge was not elected by anybody.
The judge can screw it up for a period. What it requires is an extremely robust U.S. Justice Department, which is the arm of the executive, to take it to court as fast as possible. Sometimes you find other district court judges, and this gets really confusing, who might issue another order that basically
contramands
it, trumps it. but ultimately it has to go to the Court of Appeals, who tend to have higher level.
Okay, then let me get to one of the details of this. The judge says why irreparable harm would occur. Well, all it means is paychecks aren't going out. So to
they're using irreparable harm for a reason, and that is they can't get away with making an order like that unless they first find that their failure to do so would cause what the law calls irreparable harm.
Yeah, except that, Josh, if all that's missing is the money, so money either gets paid or it doesn't get paid. If it doesn't get paid, but it can be paid 2 weeks or 2 months or 2 years from now, there is no irreparable harm, is there?
Well, you could make an argument that in some circumstances that, let's say, something has to be done. Let's say it was support Israel, and the Israelis absolutely had to have the transfer of this weapons technology, or they were going to be overwhelmed. And if you waited a month, let's say, irreparable harm. I mean, there are real cases of irreparable
harm.
Well,
except in this case, it's more about shoveling out money to non-governmental organizations that are basically just arms of the Democrat Party. And you say if they get their money 2 months or 2 years from now, they'll be fine. Is there really
irreparable harm? Well, an even greater concern. An even greater concern ought to be something that's going on at a lot of institutions. It turns out that what's called indirect cost assessments at the National Institutes of Health have been as high as 56%. Now, I used to manage a government budget, and frankly, there's no excuse for any indirect cost, which is outside money coming in, should ever be more than 10 to 15%.
These universities are acting like the mob, and the mob always demands the VIG, whether the VIG is legitimate or not. That is Josh Marquis, the former DA. We talked to him about legal matters. Glad to get your calls in a moment at 866-HEY-LARS. Send emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And you're listening to The Lars Larson Show. Hey, you know how hard it is to get medications like ivermectin and mebendazole these days? It's frustrating. Those medications are so important, but getting them, it's not easy. It's why you need to check out All Family Pharmacy. They make it easy to get ivermectin, mebendazole, and other hard-to-find medications. It's a pharmacy in Florida, not a foreign country. They handle the prescription, no doctor visits, no waiting line, and they ship it right to your door. Super simple and easy. Let's be real. We've all seen how quickly health threats can pop up and then shake things up. It's better to be prepared now than get caught off guard later on. With All Family Pharmacy, you can stock up on exactly what you need, even order in bulk to make sure you're always ready. Don't wait for the next crisis to hit. Go to allfamilypharmacy.com/Lars. That's allfamilypharmacy.com/Lars. And then use my code LARS10, LARS10, to get 10% off your entire order. Stock up now, be prepared, and make sure your family is ready for whatever comes next at allfamilypharmacy.com/Lars. And if you miss that, shoot me an email. I'll get it for you. You got the Lars Larson Show.
My doctor.
Follow Lars on Blue Sky at Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm always glad to get to your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. But I want to talk about small business and how small business is doing under Donald Trump. And you might think I'm jumping the gun just a bit, because we're only 3 weeks in, 21 days in, to the Trump presidency, and I think things are actually going very, very well. But I can check for actual data from somebody like Elaine Parker, who's president of the Job Creators Network Foundation. Elaine, welcome back.
Hey, Lars. Thanks so much for having me.
I'm glad to have you. And tell me this. It seems that all it took was the election of Donald Trump, because business sentiment began improving markedly right after the election and before he had even taken the oath.
Yeah, it sure was a long couple of months waiting for the inauguration. But anecdotally, we knew that, people were optimistic. I knew small business was optimistic because I talked to them every day. But now we have hard data, and we are seeing a 40-month high in optimism from our small business owners. And they are optimistic that the Trump administration is going to help small businesses because they have a record. It's what I said for the last 2 year low. Interest rates were low. wages were rising. I could go on and on. Groceries were low. Gas was affordable. everyone remembers that. And then they know the malaise that we've had for the last 4 years with the Biden administration. So, yes, we were all so excited for everything to get implemented and to happen and to move. And you already see the Trump administration declaring a state of a national emergency on our domestic energy, because that is the root of all the evil.
Because if you don't have energy, you don't really have an economy, do you?
Exactly. It has absolutely destabilized our economy. It has driven the cost of everything up, from eggs and milk and bread to the items on the shelves that we buy to the gas we put in our car. I mean, it drives everything we do, and you've got to bring down the cost of energy. And all the Biden administration did was drive the cost up. From the day he walked into office, he signed executive order to cancel that Keystone pipeline, and that was the beginning of driving the cost of life up, and we ended up with a cost of living crisis for all Americans. And Trump is, in 21 days, is battling every imaginable battle you can think of, and he's winning. He's winning every day.
You know what I'd like to see is that he can reverse an awful lot of the regulations, because there were some stunning numbers from the tail end of the Biden administration. It was a sad time because they imposed something like $1.4 trillion in new regulatory burdens on business generally across the country. And you say in a single year, you added $1.4 trillion in new regulations. And I'm wondering how much of that President Trump can get rolled back so that businesses will see some relief fairly quickly.
Well, he's been super smart about how he's approaching it on the big stuff. Like, he is repealing those green energy mandates, the EV mandates, all of those things that were going to drive up the cost of vehicles for people who simply can't afford EVs or don't want one. So that was a smart part on his part. But the other thing that he did is he signed an executive order requiring at least 10 existing regulations to be eliminated for every new one that was added. And I know he can achieve this because in his first term, he achieved 8 regulations eliminated for every new one. So he's upping the bar. But if anybody can do it, I believe he can.
Can I ask you about, and I hate to surprise guests with a question, but this came up last week, and I got an amazing amount of email and phone calls from people saying, how come nobody's been talking about it? But it's called the beneficial ownership information requirement. And bizarrely, the Biden administration said every business with less than 20 employees or fewer than 20 employees that does less than $5 million business, so these are very small, mostly mom and pop companies, was going to be required on an annual basis to disclose its beneficial, its BOI. And there were a few business owners who wrote to me and said, boy, I'm glad you're talking about this because this is a big concern for us. And what they said was, you have to disclose this. So it's going to take you time. It's going to take you effort. It may be very difficult to do. And supposedly it's aimed at finding shell companies that are being used to camouflage, you know, illicit business of one kind or another, drugs or something else. But it was just going to be a gigantic burden. And I guess the courts put it on hold, but that hold only lasts for a few more months. Do you know anything about this BOI requirement on small business?
I do. And we have been on the front end of this thing. It is a burden on small businesses, and it forces them to reveal, obviously, private information as well. It's really called the Corporate Transparency Act. And it was passed by Congress. It is legislation. It is on hold. It's been on hold. It's been taken off hold. It's been on hold. We have filed amicus briefs on it. The real issue here is that Congress has to pass legislation to either postpone it or to repeal it. And that's what we're really fighting for. But it is a big deal. And that's why you got so many emails on it. So I'll keep you posted on what happens. But it keeps going back and forth. It's in the courts. And there's a lot of folks out there fighting for it, fighting to get it repealed and to make it go away.
So who's pushing to get it, though? Elaine, who's saying we have to have this? Because you're right. It invades people's privacy. If you're running a small business, like a little store, and you have 5 employees and you do $2 million business in a year, so you're a very small operation, who is it that's pushing, saying we have to have this information as though these people are already criminals and need to be investigated? And you know, there it doesn't seem to have much purpose to it. So who's fighting to get this, to keep this thing in place?
I mean, an individual person, I can't point to one right now, obviously, but
members of Congress,
it is the law. It's the law. I mean, it's simply a law on the books that has to be followed. And so we and many others went into the courts to get it postponed, to get it blocked, and to give Congress time, because there are many members in Congress who are interested in repealing it. They understand it. It's not just providing all of this private information and the burden on small business. If you don't do it, you're subject to jail time and massive fines.
Yep.
I mean, it is directly targeting the smallest of the small businesses. It's like under 20 employees. It's really small.
Yeah, and believe me, some of those business owners wrote to me and said, Lawrence, I don't know if I have to comply with this, because as you said, it keeps going back and forth. The courts put it on a hold, and then they take it off hold. And if you don't comply, you may go to jail. You may be hit with tens of thousands of dollars in fines. You'd think this would be low-hanging fruit. Throw the bill out there. We're repealing it for all the small businesses, just for starters. But am I misunderstanding that Congress can't look at that and say, this is a disaster waiting to happen for the smallest businesses in America, and we need to shut this thing down? It would be nice to see them get a vote on that and get some action on it right away. That's Elaine Parker, who's president of the Job Creators Network Foundation. Elaine, thank you very much. Always glad to take your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. Send emails to talk@LarsLarson.com.
The Lars Larson Show.
It's Friday.
On my mind. Focus is Friday.
Oh, Friday.
Yeah, it's Friday. Woo!
Welcome to First Amendment Friday on the Lars Larson Show.
Thank God it's Friday.
Today, Lars puts you in the driver's seat. You talk about what you want to talk about.
Government is the problem.
No topic is off limits.
We will make America great again.
Call 866-HEY-LARS.
That's 866-HEY-LARS to speak your mind.
Now, First Amendment Friday with Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I want to get something off my chest, because lately I've been hearing a lot from people who say, look at this. Elon Musk goes to work as the head of Doge to root out government waste, fraud, and abuse of the taxpayers' money. And all of a sudden, the State Department plans to purchase $400 million worth of armored Tesla Cybertrucks. There's a problem with that little meme, though, and I want to give you the details of it. First, welcome to the program. If you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, any day of the week, it's great, at 866-HEY-LARS. And on First Amendment Friday, of course, we always put naysayers to the head of the line every day of the week. But if you want to dial in and you're a naysayer, it's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. So you get these headlines. State Department plans $400 million purchase of armored Tesla Cybertrucks. And immediately, the liberals out there go nuts. They say, you see, Donald Trump brings Elon Musk on board, and all of a sudden, his State Department is planning to buy armored Tesla Cybertrucks. Well, there's a problem with that meme. And here's the problem. The Biden administration, the previous president, his State Department put out what's called an RFP, a request for proposals. They said, basically, who wants to bid on supplying armored vehicles to the State Department? And there was one company that put in a bid, and it was Tesla. And the bid was awarded to Tesla because they were the only bidder. Now, I don't know how many trucks they were buying for $400 million, whether it was 400 of them or 800 of them or 4,000 of them. The bottom line is Trump's put that on hold for now. But the contract was set by the Biden administration, and yet the mainstream media is trying to say, you see, this is Donald Trump flipping sweet deals to his Elon Musk buddy, and that is not the case. It was Joe Biden who decided to hire Tesla to supply those Cybertrucks. On that note, let's go to Karina, who joins us now. Karina, welcome to First Amendment Friday. What's on your mind?
Hello. Well, I was going to add that as well.
You're going to add what?
The only bidder. He was the only bidder.
Yeah.
And it was Biden administration. But okay. The other thing is, Representative Kazar from Texas, he's the one that he was in the DOGE committee meeting.
Yeah.
They've got a committee. He was ranting about the inspector generals that were fired. Five of them were is investigating Musk's companies. One was from the Department of Labor with 17 open investigations. Transportation was investigating Tesla. Defense was investigating SpaceX, and agriculture was investigating Neuralink, and EPA was investigating Tesla many times.
But were they fired for that reason, or were they fired because they were bad inspectors general?
He was ranting, and I don't know. I didn't check any of these out, but he was making his statement that this committee is a scam and all this stuff. And it really upset me.
Well, it upsets me too, because I think, frankly, Americans have been begging for somebody to go root out waste, fraud, and abuse. And the mainstream media, the New York Times, worst of all, they literally came out about two days ago, might have been 3 days ago, and they said Donald Trump, without any evidence to back it up, has said that there's waste, fraud, and abuse in the United States government. And you say, you're the New York Times. You know that there have been previous investigations back when Biden was still in office that said there's up to $250 billion of waste, fraud, and abuse estimated to be happening in the federal government. And then the New York Times acts like, well, I've never heard of such a thing, waste in the federal government. I mean, who would perish the thought? Who would say that that's happening? We all know that it's happening. And, Karina, you make a very good point. Let's go to Marty. Hey, Marty, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars, so the fraud, waste, and abuse in the government. So I served as a pararescueman in the Air Force. My last duty station was at Nellis, and I kind of got into the politics of the whole thing. So I learned that we actually have a budget. Just your unit has a budget. Every year you have to spend every dime, because if you don't spend every dime, the next year you get less.
Yep. So they say, but does that suggest that you have bad management? Because if you were in a private sector company, I would think that in most private sector companies, if the boss says, hey, we need to build a new building or we need to do something, here's a budget. And then the manager knows that if he walks into the boss and says, hey, remember that $5 million building that you ordered us to build? Well, we got it done for $4.5 million. That manager is going to be impressed. He's going to impress his boss. And he's likely going to rise because the boss says, yeah, this is the guy who gets stuff done faster and ahead of budget or under budget.
It gets worse. So as a pararescueman, you have to be proficient in skydiving and scuba diving and rock climbing, right? All of those things you could do in Las Vegas. But where did we go? We go to Germany to skydive, and we go to Bermuda to scuba dive, and we go to Wales to rock climb.
Even though you could do it right there.
Yeah. Not that I didn't complain back then.
No, I'm sure you didn't. But Marty, this is where that's the kind of fraud that's, or waste and abuse is probably the hardest to root out. Because if you say, if you look at a line item in a budget and it says skydive training, X number of dollars, and unless you dig deep into that and say, well, where did they do the training and where could they have done the training? It's the same thing. This is one of the reasons we made the suggestion that I got from a lot of people by email, which is, why doesn't every state have sort of a DOGE-like unit that's looking into this? Because you'll hear about government bureaucracies that have their own big building, but then you say, well, we're going to have our annual staff meeting of some kind, and we're going to hold it at a really nice resort somewhere. Well, if it's really, truly a staff meeting, does it have to be at a place with a golf course and a swimming pool? Or could you actually have, if it's a staff meeting, at your own building or some other building the state already owns, and you supply coffee and donuts in the morning and not much else?
Yeah, and you don't really realize it until you get out of it's like, oof, yeah, no, that was bad.
Yeah, and by the way, thank you very much for your service. Being a PJ is tough duty. Hey, I do want to mention this. The FBI has been sending out distorted data to fool Americans into thinking that crime is down. I want to give you a couple of quick examples. They come from my friend John Lott at the Crime Prevention Research Bureau. And he says that the FBI has shoveled out numbers saying that violent crime was down and falling under the Biden administration. And then later on, they revised the data to say, well, it wasn't actually down 2%. It was up 4.5%. We've talked about the issue on the show before. The second thing they've done, though, is they do everything they can to minimize what armed citizens do in stopping crime. So what did they decide to do? The FBI says that there were only 2014 to 2023, 14 cases out of 350 active shooter situations where armed citizens stopped the incident, except that the Crime Prevention Research Center went out and looked at 500 shooter incidents in the same 10-year period, and they found that about a third of the time, an armed private citizen had stopped that incident and likely saved lives.
The risks and rewards of remote work.
Where are you now?
I'm sitting in my office.
I doubt that.
Why would you doubt that?
If you were in your office right now, we'd be having this conversation face to face.
At least woke progressives won't stop you from listening to the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm always glad to get to your calls, especially on First Amendment Fridays. But I want to ask about RFK Jr., now confirmed by the U.S. Senate to head up Health and Human Services, one of those really fraudulent agencies that has been shoveling out money for a lot of different things, not all of them related to Health and Human Services. I decided to invite our friend Jake Novak, who's anchor for American Sunrise Early Edition on Real America's Voice. Jake, welcome back.
Thanks for having me. Definitely a busy week, so I appreciate it. Thank you.
Do you think we're going to get a not busy week anytime in the next 4 years? Because usually new administrations kind of slow down or they hit their pace. I think we're going to be going at light speed for the next 48 months.
Yeah, I agree. And it's a chicken and the egg question. Are we going at light speed because Donald Trump and his people want to move that fast, or because we have so much work to do? There's just so many different. I often say that America is an absolutely conquered country. The good news is that we're conquered by so many different entities that there's no rhyme or reason to it. In other words, if it were just one country, we're just China or just Iran or just some of the other interests, then we would be in much worse shape because they don't have enough of a foothold. But there's so many basic things to push back on in this country. So yeah,
well,
that's why I think the answer is the egg.
Well, and these examples, Jake, like this week. When you've got the gentleman who's heading up EPA, and he says, look, he only found out about this because of some undercover video showing one of these jokers at EPA bragging, it's like throwing gold bars off a sinking Titanic. He was describing the situation that liberals found in federal agencies found themselves in when their sinking ship, of course, was Kamala Harris, defeated in the November election. And they decided, well, if we're going down, before we go down, we're going to throw all these gold bars out. So they transferred $20 billion into a bank. I think it was Citibank. And they said, okay, and then the money will be shuffled out by the bank. But on the books in the federal government, all the Doge team is going to find is this money's already been spent, even though it literally hadn't been spent. So apparently they've clawed it back. How many of these people do we have in the federal government who've decided that when the American people choose different personnel, which means different policies, that they have a right to contradict the choice of the American public from their positions as so-called public servants?
Oh, I think it's every single agency. The number is tell me how many agencies there are, and I'll tell you how many people are doing this. You can have people on who will tell you the same thing. Which is, if you talk to people who are career political people, I would say in kind of the middle management of the bureaucracy, they're not the appointed leaders, they're not the first assistant that kind of people might be able to see on a letterhead. But the people who actually run the day-to-day operations, I would say a huge percentage, majority of them, believe that it's ridiculous that they should be held accountable, that they are the professionals, and that there shouldn't be any accountability for them. And they don't care about the American people. They don't care about really the concept of our country. They believe in individual ideologies. They were hired that way. You know, they brought in a bunch of environmentalist people who are absolutely a religion. Laura says no such thing as a non-religious person. If you're not Christian, Jewish, Islam, Muslim, or you're something. And environmentalism is one of them. These are all people who have different loyalties than the United States of America and the American voter. And they're not even afraid to say so. I mean, they'll tell you this is what we need to do. They're not really that ashamed of it. But now that they're being caught, they're suing to keep their jobs. But they're not saying, oh, I didn't do that. They're not denying what you just said. That was Lee Zeldin talking about the $20 billion. No one's saying we didn't do that. They're just saying we had the right to do it. And of course, they didn't.
Well, and it also fits into another idea that I've been looking at lately, Jake, reading up. And it was pushed a long time ago by even people like, I think, Musk's dad at one point was part of some crazy group that said we should have the scientific and intellectual elite run the countries, not the people. I mean, the masses are asses. We don't have to listen to them. And there are people who think, well, you know, I think Klaus Schwab, you know, at WEF is one of those people who thinks we're all the smart people. We make better decisions than everybody else, so we'll just make the decisions for people. And it fits right into that meme that somehow people who work in governments, some of them, say we're the smartest people. We know all the stuff about this thing. The public knows nothing, and they don't have any right to interfere with us running the country. That's the way they view the world.
That's exactly right. And this is exactly what the Constitution and the Founding Fathers understood. They understood this very well. The elitism of Britain 1775 is born again in these people that you just described. It was a similar attitude that the colonies existed for Britain's, the homeland's enrichment, not for their own freedom, that they had no right to speak or do what they wanted to do, and they existed for the pleasure of somebody else as opposed to having a representative government. The colonists, you know, the Founding Fathers, they wanted to have a president who was just like a king in his authority and his importance, but with accountability. Accountability is such a clear part of this, of the Constitution, that the idea, for example, that we had to wait for the Supreme Court in a Chevron decision to say the obvious, which is that the bureaucrats aren't allowed to make the law. They have to, the Congress can't just do a general law and say, you bureaucrats figure out how to make the water clean. You pass all the individual laws. That it literally had to go to the Supreme Court before it was obvious that that's not what the Constitution intended, is a disgrace. It's so obvious that isn't the case. And there probably are a lot of great scientific professionals and economic professionals in the federal government, but there's never in the history of the world, Lars, been a job or a position without accountability that didn't lead to bad performance.
Yep.
That's the issue here. And it's just so sad because they're proving us right every single day, and they're absolutely insulted that we demand accountability for them, and that's all you need to know.
I'm talking to Jake Novak from Real America's Voice. Let me ask you about Kennedy, though, because I disagree with RFK Jr.'s positions on at least a dozen major issues. And while I may agree with him on one or two, what kind of job is he going to do heading up HHS? Do you think he's being assigned by Trump saying, here's your job, stay in your lane, and Trump will keep an eye on him? Or is he going to be allowed to push a lot of other personal agendas like what we were just talking about?
Well, I think the answer to Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is similar to some of the other secretaries, even the ones who are much more in alignment with what you and I believe in more politically. And three words, low-hanging fruit. The last 20 years of this woke agenda has made it so easy to choose things that are so such the anathema to common sense that you can fixate on that. If, for example, there are dyes and other chemicals in our foods that almost every other country bans because they're shown to be dangerous, and he focuses on that, good luck. Good luck pushing back on him on that. That's not going to be – it's going to be very popular. He should go after – and if for example, he doesn't have to go after vaccines as a concept, but making it that you can't ever sue a vaccine company, I mean, that's not popular in America. We're supposed to be such a litigious company with the country, with our tort lawyers and things like that. There are so many things for RFK Jr. and all the other secretaries, frankly, but certainly for RFK Jr. to focus on that won't be controversial for somebody like you and me and won't be controversial for the country. That's how bad it is. That's how far we've gone. We have, again, no accountability for a number of different companies. Big Pharma, should absolutely, I mean, you know, he could go after, for example, and this would be something that the news media would go crazy against him for, but it would be popular, he should start, not start with, but one of the first things you should do is start finding ways to curb prescription drug advertising on TV. You know, I'm not that old. Prescription drug advertising on TV was not allowed until 1997, okay? We can all remember 1997. Can you imagine the mainstream news media existing today without pharma ads? Because I can't.
Nope, it would not happen. Jake, thanks very much. That's Jake Novak, anchor at American Sunrise, early edition on Real America's Voice. Now, if you want to join what we call the best conversation in talk journalism, it's here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. You can send emails to talk at LarsLarson.com. You can vote in our poll on X. And, of course, naysayers always go to the head of the line. If you disagree with yours truly, you are certainly welcome to be put first in line to make a comment, ask a question, demand answers of me, whatever you'd like to do. That's what we call naysayers. We've been affording naysayers that opportunity for more than 25 years.
The Lars Larson Show.
They're cuddlers and co-workers.
Are you experiencing technical difficulties?
That electrician must be a Democrat.
No technical difficulties here. This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on First Amendment Friday. Glad to get you your calls, too. We'll do that in just a moment at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. And as always, naysayers go to the head of the line. Send emails to talk at LarsLarson.com. Vote in our poll on X. You can find that at Lars Larson Show and on my website at LarsLarson.com. Are government employee unions lying, cheating, and stealing to keep their members from leaving the union and taking their dues with them? Jeff Rhodes is vice president at the Freedom Foundation, author of the new book, Opt Out, How Government Employee Unions Are Battling Their Own Members and a Ferocious Think Tank to Keep Funding Extreme Liberal Politics with Somebody Else's Dues. Jeff, I might have edited that title of the book down a little bit, but it's something we talk about all the time. Welcome back.
Well, it's good to be back.
Describe for my audience how these government employee unions lie, cheat, and steal to keep their members in line and, of course, their dues flowing.
Well, basically, you want to go back to 2018 when there was a landmark decision by the U.S. Supreme Court called Janus v. AFSCME. And basically what that did was it recognized the right of public employees to leave their union, to not be required to be in a union or pay dues to one in order to keep their job. And we sort of anticipated at that point that there would be hundreds of thousands, disgruntled union members leaving. And it didn't really turn out that way at first. They were sort of trickling, and that's because there were so many things that the unions were doing to keep them there. And for example, one of the most pernicious things they do is called an opt-out window. They basically say, you have the right to opt out, but we're only going to recognize that right for 2 weeks a year. It's just things like that, not lying to them, not telling them about their unions, not telling them about their right to opt out. So that's where the Freedom Foundation comes in. If the union won't do it, we will.
And is it true? I mean, I've met Mark Janus. I've talked to him. He's actually politically, as an individual American, he's a liberal. He works in the government in Illinois, and he told me, he said, "Look, I just got tired of having the union misrepresent me, and I didn't want to have to belong, and didn't think I should." And like you said, that case went to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said, "You're right. Public employees have a right to quit their union membership, or at least stop paying the dues even if technically.
Yeah, it's
go ahead.
Yeah, it's a bit more complicated than that, but that's essentially the gist of it. There's nothing that a union can do to keep them there, but on the other hand, they don't have to make it easy for them to get out. I guess is their that's their position.
Well, but does a union have a right in the light of that decision to say to its members, "You can quit"? But there's only a 2-week period every year, and if you don't quit within those 2 weeks, you can't quit before, you can't quit after, you have to quit right during those 14 days. Does the union have the authority to do that?
If you ask me, no. But it's been we've had several cases that we challenged those opt-out windows, and so far lower courts they usually go up to the Ninth Circuit, which invariably rules against us, and as yet the U.S. Supreme Court has not taken up any of those cases. They have not actually taken any Janus-related cases since the original ruling came down in 2018. So there's a lot of loose. I guess it needs to be tightened up, and it's long overdue for the Supreme Court to do that.
Well, it sounds like the Supreme Court is effectively saying, we gave you the decision, that should be sufficient, now make it work. Except that, as you pointed, it's not working. By the way, in terms of lying, cheating, and stealing, I want to back that up for my audience. How do the unions lie, cheat, and steal, other than the things we've already talked about?
Well, let's, rather than what they do to the their members, why don't we focus on what the focus of the book is, what they do to us.
Yeah.
For example, there have been any number of personal attacks on the staff here. For example, the CEO got a mailer, or he got a mailing in his mailbox one day, and it was talking about the fact that he lived in this neighborhood. Not only he, but everybody in his neighborhood got a mailer saying that Tom McCabe lives in his neighborhood. And this was like, 7 or 8 years ago. And not only that, but they sent robocalls out to all his neighbors saying, Tom McCabe of the Freedom Foundation lives in your neighborhood, and maybe you ought to confront him. But he wasn't the only one.
That sounds personally threatening to me.
I can tell you firsthand, because other people working here got it, including me. They were basically... it didn't say as much, but they were inviting us. They were inviting people to confront us, maybe even physically. Another thing, but they also come after our board members. One of our board members owned an employment agency, and they sent out mailers to all of their clients talking about how terrible this person was. They didn't the same thing with one of our board members is a real estate developer, and they sent a mailer out to a lot of people who bought his properties, mentioning that he had like bogus environmental claims against him and things like that. That's what they do. I remember one time I had one of them stalk me. I mean, I was literally driving home, and somebody was pulling in behind me. Somebody pulled in behind me while I was driving, and stayed with me almost the whole way home. Whenever I changed lanes, he was right behind me. And then he finally pulled up alongside of me, and he's literally holding onto the steering wheel with one hand and leaning over, shooting pictures of me with the other. And I managed to get his license plate, and it turned out to be some lower-level state employee who I assume was doing this at the behest of the union. For what reason, I don't know, but that's, you know, maybe just to intimidate me.
Well, I'm hoping Americans are paying attention to what's happening, Jeff. I'm talking to Jeff Rhodes from the Freedom Foundation, because they're seeing that government agencies and the people who work within them, not all of them, but some of them, will say, we have a new president who doesn't want us to spend money, so we're going to go ahead and spend it anyway. In other words, they're directly flying in the face of the choice of the American voter to say, we get to choose our president. When you choose personnel, you're choosing policy. And yet, government employees are saying, well, we don't want to follow those policies, so we're going to deliberately simply say, we're not going to do it. And you can't make us do it. And it involves literally billions of dollars. If you remember yesterday, Jeff, thank you very much for the time. But yesterday, when you had people at EPA saying, we're tossing gold bars off the Titanic. In other words, they said, we've got a new president coming in. He's going to shut down this spending. So we're going to move the money around so the public can't find out where it went, even though it's the public's money. Hey, by the way, you know how hard it's been to get medications, things like ivermectin and mebendazole these days? It's frustrating. Those medications are so important, but getting your hands on them, it's not so easy. That's why you need to check out All Family Pharmacy. They make it easy to get ivermectin, mebendazole, and other hard-to-find medication. The pharmacy is located in Florida, not a foreign country, and they handle the prescription, so no doctor visits, no waiting line. They ship it right to your door. It's super simple and easy. Let's be real. We've all seen how quickly health threats can pop up and shake things up. It's better to get prepared now than get caught off guard later on. With All Family Pharmacy, you can stock up on what you need, even order it in bulk to make sure you're always ready. Don't wait for the next crisis to hit. Go to allfamilypharmacy.com/Lars and use code Lars10 to get 10% off your order. Stock up now. Be prepared. Make sure your family is ready for whatever comes next at allfamilypharmacy.com/Lars. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show.
My dog.
Everyone's favorite color is gold.
I can proudly proclaim that the golden age of America is upon us.
Sit back and enjoy. This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on a First Amendment Friday. Always glad to get your calls, too, at 866-HEY-LARS. And, of course, naysayers always go to the head of the line at 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. You know, I was just thinking over the last couple of weeks about the fact that we've literally been talking to people from the organization known as OpenTheBooks.com. I mean, all the way back to its founder, the late Adam Andrzejewski, who sadly passed away way too young. But John Hart took his place as the CEO of OpenTheBooks.com. But, John, one of the conundrums that I've faced is that for years we've talked to Open the Books about all the information your organization brings forward by just looking at federal and state and local budgets throughout America and pointing out some of the insane ways that money is being spent, wasted, abused, and the rest. But we'd never had anybody in place who could actually do something about it. And now for the last 3 weeks, we've had exactly that. And as near as we can tell, Donald Trump and the team at Doge have been doing exactly that, taking the numbers and saying, yeah, we're not going to spend the money that way anymore. So welcome back to the program.
Well, thanks, Lars. It's great to be on again. Yeah, it's been an extraordinary few weeks to watch this unfold. And look, we did everything we could back when, you know, I was working for Coburn in the Senate, and the Tea Party era members, they did a good job on things like earmarks and slowing down the growth of government. We even reduced spending year to year for the first time since the end of the Korean War. But what we really needed is someone to come in and reverse the 100-year really strategy that the progressive left has undertaken to create this administrative state. And that's really what we've seen. It's an opportunity, you know, to tear down the bureaucratic wall that separated we the people from their government.
Well, and in fact, this really does date all the way. Doesn't this date all the way back to FDR? Because FDR was the one who kind of created correct me if I'm wrong, but he created the administrative state the way it sits today.
It did. I think it even goes back to really like 1909. There's an author named Herbert Croly, and Herbert Croly had a very dim view of the individuals. He called individual Americans unregenerate and said that what they really need is a schoolmaster to use whatever coercive means are necessary. It's truly his words. So this is the person who's the father of the modern progressive movement. Woodrow Wilson took his cues from Croly, and then FDR. And it's important to note that because this is a long-term generational struggle, and it's really an opportunity to restore and really renovate the founder's vision of limited government. I think it's in some ways Doge looks like a demolition project. I think it's really a restoration project. And sometimes you have to knock walls down to really rediscover what the basic principle and the basic structure and architecture is of our free society.
Well,
because, that's been very exciting to see that.
Yeah, because, John, correct me if I'm wrong, but the founders of this country were some very smart people. They were also very young for all the people who think, well, Elon Musk has all these 20-somethings doing all this stuff. Yeah, the folks who founded the country, Jefferson, Madison, and the rest, were mostly in their 20s. A couple of them were in their early 30s, but they're all very young people. But they didn't come into it saying, we're the smart folks. We'll have the smart folks run our new country. They literally said, we're going to write a document that defines that the United States will be run by representatives of the people. And Jefferson, the one who famously said that you have to have an informed electorate. So you had to tell the electorate what was going on because they were going to choose the people who would represent their point of view in the Congress and the White House and perhaps even on the judiciary. So they clearly intended that it would be the people making decisions, not just the smartest folks in the room.
That's exactly right. And they put transparency in the Constitution, and that even precedes the Bill of Rights. So now we have an opportunity where Elon Musk, we're encouraging them to create something called America's Checkbook. And the concept, Lars, is really simple, is that every American taxpayer has the same right to see what's in the Treasury payment system as they do their own personal checkbook, because, as you know, it's not the government's money, it's their money. So why should we not let citizens see what the government's doing through this Treasury payment system? And this is it's a really important turning point, because we've done good work in creating transparency back in the 2006 bill, which enabled Open the Books to do a lot of the work it does. But we live in a real time society where we need taxpayers have the right to know right away. Just as if you want to sign up for a fraud alert or a low balance alert for your checking account, you can do that. And why not give people visibility and access so that we can have an honest conversation about, should we be spending more money on roads and bridges or defense, or should we spend money on, drag shows in Ecuador? And if someone wants to make the case for drag shows in Ecuador, let's have that argument. That's how free society works. But most people probably would not favor that.
Well, let's talk about a specific example, because I told my audience that this is now more than a week old when it was announced that Musk announced it, that they found $59 million had been sent last week to pay for the luxury hotel rooms of illegal aliens in New York City. And this follows October when KJP, speaking on behalf of Joe Biden, flatly denied it, said no money from FEMA is going to pay for illegal aliens. And then we find out that the bureaucrats said, Trump doesn't want us to spend this money, so let's send the money out the door before he can get his hands on it. And we, the bureaucrats, are going to make that decision. I think those people should not just be fired, but they should be prosecuted.
Right. Yeah, Lars, well, sadly, the problem is much worse than even $57 million going to luxury hotels in New York. We just put a report out this week that the Office of Refugee Resettlement has spent $22.6 billion since 2020 funding nonprofits who were really incentivizing illegal immigration. And if you step back for a minute, we remember Reagan's Shining City on a Hill, this idea that the city had walls, but it also had doors for people who were willing to come here legally. So what the American taxpayers have really blown the whistle on and fed up with is this counterfeit compassion argument that we're going to provide all these free benefits, all these cash benefits for migrants. But what we're really doing is creating incentives for traffickers, for all kinds of illegal activity. And we discovered that there are 300,000 migrant children that are unaccounted for. How is that compassionate to those parents and those kids, where we've lost track of people? And so I think there's common sense is finally kind of winning the day on this one. And you've got to have border security to have even a compassionate immigration system. I mean, it's the foundation of any free society that you have a border with a system of rule of law.
Well, and not only that, but that 22.6, as I understand it, it wasn't just, well, we're going to give them a meal and a cot and some medical care. It's we're going to give them a car, a house. We're going to give them loans for small business startups. And I can imagine a lot of Americans, especially those in Maui, North Carolina, Florida, Los Angeles, hold on a second. We get $700 when our entire neighborhood burns down, and you say, good luck, $700 ought to tide you over for a day or two, and the illegal alien is getting the $15,000 loan to start a new business, even though he's come into the country illegally. That's John Hart. He's the CEO for OpenTheBooks.com.
The Lars Larson
John, it's
Show.
Always a pleasure.
Serving in Afghanistan,